Jay Pizzy, Mosier on the beat. Look at my team, ay. Look at the ring, whoa. See what I mean, ay. You see what I mean? Look at my team, look at the ring, everything. This is a dream, all but a dream. This ain't a dream, I am a fiend for the cream, go. DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
See, I calculate. Yeah, y'all just palpitate. Whoa, if you don't calculate, get it? Get it? Calculate. Lady Justice is illustrious. I just love this. I can put this in this function and it turns up into something. And that something came from nothing. And I sold it for a button. Now I got this lovely lump sum. Guess I'll burn these bumps like buzzing, bro.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
This ain't a dream, I am a fiend.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the DTC Podcast. This is episode number 197 and possibly the final episode of the season. This is the season finale. So there's going to be some major fireworks, Izzy, this week.
Okay.
Are you excited?
Yes and no. I'm a little sad.
I'm a little sad too. Actually, I subtweeted somebody on Twitter that was sad that the season's ending, but this one felt like more of a grind than the other seasons. So I'm a little bit happy that it's coming to an end.
Yeah, I can see. I mean, I definitely took the opportunity to reset a lot more leagues and just kind of like go for 2021 just because with the uncertainty. So I guess I'm okay with the season ending. It wasn't as I wasn't as committed to the playoffs as I was in previous seasons, just because of, you know, the six teams that I decided to forego the 2020 season. So I really only had 9 leagues that I was playing for in 2020.
So you're still feeling fresh.
Yeah, I'm not as I haven't felt the grind. I mean, it's amazing how, you know, trying to basically, what is it called? The progressive punt. Just kind of going for 2021 just alleviates a lot of that, you know, weekly grind that you deal with the, you know, with trying to go for it.
Yeah, I call it sandbagging. That's nice that you're keeping yourself fresh, though. You're like a poster child for Summer's Eve, feeling fresh.
Feeling, yes, Daisy.
I'm feeling not so fresh, so I wouldn't be a good example for them. I feel like I'll just call it sandbagging. I sandbagged in 3 leagues and I was competitive in 6 or 7. I can't remember how many I'm in. And lineups this year were a brute, an absolute brute. Like, I felt like I changed my lineups more this year than any other year. And every time I changed it, it was wrong. I left in like people who would be like suddenly became inactive, like more time. I made more lineup mistakes this year than any other year I've ever been in. You know, it's awful. It was bad.
Yeah, I will say the COVID stuff with guys like, yep, maybe not playing and maybe playing and with the Thursday games, it was a shit show.
Thursday, I mean, like Tuesday games, Wednesday games,
day.
Yeah. It was insane. You had to check your lineups consistently. Like every single day you'd have to check your lineups.
Yeah, no, that part wasn't fun.
And it's like, today was a great example. Like we had, I think it was like, I've got Antonio Gandy-Golden stashed away on IR in a few leagues. And suddenly he became active, so you would have had IR violations. And that was like the theme throughout the season, too, is just people coming in and out of IR, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this season, and there's just so many monster performances. You know, we talked a little bit about this last week. I do find it funny that people seem like they take out, when they win the championship, they kind of puff their chest and like, oh, you know, it takes a lot of skill to win a championship. And I wholeheartedly disagree, unless it's a certain format. You know, depending on the format and how you format your leagues, the head-to-head all the way through the playoffs is more luck than it is skill. And weeks like, you know, Alvin Kamara having your game was over. On one player pretty much ended your game, ended your championship.
Yeah,
one way or the other. So it's like, there, you just need that. If that Kamara game happens in week 13 instead of in the playoffs, it's far less impactful than it does when it happens week 16, right?
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I don't know. This year there's a few of those. I mean, Derrick Henry the last couple of years won so many championships just based on how big of his performances were in the last couple weeks of the season. So it's you just got to get lucky, man. You got to get lucky with matchups, with the performances that your players put out, these studs coming through, and even the tertiary players that have, like Myles Gaskin, probably won a couple championships this year for people put him in his flag. I mean, that's a 30-point outburst. Maybe yep. more. He Mike, might have had 35.
Mike Davis. Was it Mike Davis? I can't remember who it was. Or no, it was Wilson.
Yeah, Jeff Wilson, another monster-like performance. I mean, how many Jeff Wilson, Myles Gaskin? I mean, both of these guys are undrafted players that were picked up off waivers, and you needed multiple injuries for it to happen. And, you know, good for you. You got lucky that those guys were available and you were able to plug them in. And, you know, Mostert got hurt and Salvin Ahmed was banged up. And it is what it is. You just accept it, be happy, and just be, you know, take onus in the fact that you were skillful enough to get into the playoffs, and then the chips fell where they may.
Yeah. Now, I got to circle back. Like you mentioned something about Kamara. I'm not sure what format of playoffs would have saved anybody against Kamara, though. It's like, what formats of playoffs were you talking about that you prefer instead of
Kamara? Kamara didn't have a good week 14 and 15.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, if it's not head-to-head, maybe it's an all-play format, maybe it's an accumulative points format, you're not always going to get the same results. You know, for instance, in our Minnesota Made League that we're in together, I would have played, if it was head-to-head, I would have advanced to the semifinals, and then I would have won the league. But since we did an all-play format, I finished with the third fewest points.
Yeah, but we have the finals are the championship game is head-to-head, basically.
No, but I'm saying, like, in our Minnesota Made,
getting to, yeah.
We have it as all-play.
For the first two rounds, yep.
Yes, for the first two rounds. If we would have had head-to-head, I would have been matched up and I would have advanced because I would have beaten the other person, even though I would have finished third out of the four teams in all play. I would have advanced to the semifinals, and then I would have won the semifinals and the finals.
Yeah.
So it's like those, like, different formats will create different results. Now, personally, I like the all play format, and I think it's good that I wasn't, that I didn't advance, because I think the all play is better. But I mean, it is what it is. I mean,
I guess the only point I was making is Kamara, regardless of what the format of playoffs are, would have been a league winner had the team made it to the finals, regardless of the format, you know?
Correct. But yeah, so I'm saying, regardless of the format, yes, yep. Getting to the finals, absolutely.
And then maybe, so really quickly, this is kind of a fun discussion, just talking about the different formats of playoffs, and maybe giving some commission or some tips on how to maybe do some, instill some changes to make things more balanced. But, how do you, I actually kind of like the way that the Scout League does it. So it's a full-time fantasy scout. We participate in a high stakes league there, and the top four teams make it. I like more than that, but the top four teams make it to the playoff, and the criteria to make the playoffs is kind of cool in itself too. So like the top two records and the top two scoring points, essentially the next, you know, basically the next, because sometimes the top record is also the top scoring points, but so the top two records, top two scoring points make it. And then for 3 weeks, it's an all play, like a rotisserie for all 3 weeks. And the advantage that you get is however many average points you scored per game during the season, you get that added to your score each week during the playoffs.
So yeah, like, I love that. I mean, we talked about that a little bit last week, and I love that format.
Yeah, you're in it. You're in it until the last game, no matter what seed you are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it just gives you more, you know, 3 weeks of putting together the most points that you can put together. So that 1 week, you know, you could have an aberration where it's just like, I guess, an anomaly week and still be in it.
Yep. And it was cool for us too, because we are one of the teams that made it, and we have Kamara. So it kind of like fits into your example perfectly. When you were talking about that, that's all I could think of. But like, yeah. we had, to your point, that Kamara kind of struggled the last couple weeks. We did too. We have Christian McCaffrey. Kamara, we have a ton of injuries. Keenan Allen, like, that's our top receiver. And Kamara basically saved us, like, put us into the money in the final week. You know, it was kind of funny how it all worked out. So we got our fingers crossed. I think we're up like 35 points, and it's basically DK Metcalf versus Amari Cooper.
We're fine.
Yeah, I think we're good. DK would have to outscore Amari by like 50 points, 45 points, basically, I think. So Probably not happening. But yeah, I think that's a cool format. That's one that maybe people could, you know, learn from. I like the idea of maybe bringing in more teams, but I like that. It's a good one. Good
format. How's your speaking of last week? How's Jackson's finger? Can we hear the story?
Oh yeah, there is. I got contacted by several people asking about that. Right in the middle of the podcast, actually towards the beginning, my wife came down and interrupted us while we were recording and basically said that Jackson sliced his finger open with a knife. He's bleeding everywhere. Our twins, our five-year-old twins, were already in bed, and Jackson's screams caused them to be terrified. So, like, all hell seemed to break loose while we were recording, and I had to go and help things out, especially because there was the possibility that Jackson could have needed stitches. My wife's reaction was slightly an overreaction. He didn't do it too bad. It was a pretty bloody mess, but after we cleaned it off and took a look, it wasn't as deep. So we kind of lucked out there. He had stitches this summer, so we thought he repeated already.
Gotcha. Can you explain to the audience how you know bright Jackson is?
I don't want to. I mean, yeah.
Okay. You don't have to. Okay.
So he wanted a Gatorade.
A lot of people are going to wonder how your kid is getting a hold of knives.
Yeah. So mom was putting the twins to bed, and Jackson decided that this was a perfect time for him to go grab a Gatorade. And the cap was on there pretty tight. Like these little mini bottles of Gatorade that we purchased recently, like take the strength of two rhinos and 17 elephants to open. And so when Jackson couldn't open it and both parents were not there, he, you know, saw an opportunity to grab a chef's knife from the knife holder and proceed to stab at the top of the cap in order to make holes to drink out of, like he was in a survival situation.
Like so he wasn't even trying to like pry it open so he could actually twist it off. He was actually just stabbing the top of it.
He was taking stabs at the top of the cap to make puncture holes in order to take small drinks from. Because apparently, like, you know, dehydration had set in. It was the third day without anything to drink. And he was, you know, on a deserted island and he couldn't find any other liquids, you know, kind of like Bear Grylls.
He does
watch Man vs. Wild and he likes it. So maybe he felt a little bit of survival situation. But anyway,
inspired. Yeah.
His accuracy wasn't as good as he thought, and he missed one of his stabs. And, well, I guess depending on if he was aiming at his finger or not, but he chose to stab his finger instead of puncturing the cap, and the rest is history.
Well, I got to ask, did he at least puncture a hole in the top?
Here's the funny thing. I looked at the evidence. I felt like Dexter from the hit TV show, like I was a blood spatter analyst. And I put together everything. I taped up strings and stuff to see exactly the projectile of the, you know, the blood flying and stuff to figure out exactly what happened when I was piecing together evidence. And there were part of the evidence, exhibit B was the cap, and there were several puncture holes in the top already, like 5 to 6. So he was probably feeling pretty good.
Oh, so he made it.
Oh yeah, I think he was like probably 7 for 8.
So what, he was basically overkill.
He was getting more. Yeah, he's going for more. I don't know if he like maybe stopped after 4 or 5 and realized that the Gatorade flow per square inch wasn't as high as he had hoped. So he continued.
Do you think? Because he obviously, we know that he had beef with your daughter the other day.
Yeah.
Right, a week ago, and he put out that poll on Twitter. Do you think he kind of he like blacked out and had maybe like an out of body experience and
just
like was pretending like it was like he was just kept stabbing and he couldn't stop, like he couldn't stop himself?
Sure. Yep. He went haywire with a knife and just he lost it. He saw red and went, he lost all control. And maybe he was envisioning the Gatorade bottle was his father for punishing him for hitting his sister. I don't know. What was I thinking? I should not punish my children. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So Jackson has dropped from a first round startup value down into the. This is basically part of his Wonderlic test, you know, and he didn't pass. But there's time; he can still grow. I'm gonna work with him. We're gonna develop.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that's my Jackson story, and we do have some other stories pertaining to NFL players, specifically surrounding Dynasty. This week we chose instead of grinding through player performances like on a week to week basis since the season is kind of winding down, we want to prepare you a little bit for the off season and talk about some impending free agents. So we're gonna specifically focus in on wide receivers. So I'm gonna go through maybe if we have time, we'll do up all five that we've got written down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But we'll try to get through most of them here. So Izzy, I want to start with Kenny Golladay. And what we're going to do during this format is we're going to cover like what we think the odds are of them leaving their situation, their current team, and if there are other positions for them that would be better for them. And then if we do think they're leaving, you know, what kind of hole that leaves behind for other players to fill in. So Kenny Golladay for me is an interesting one, because if he leaves Detroit, there really isn't much left. I think Marvin Jones may also be a free agent. Yeah, Marvin Jones is also a free agent, and he's also a little bit elderly when it comes to level B wide receivers.
If he's elderly, what are you?
Well, I'm not an NFL player. Like it's pertaining to the NFL.
Okay,
he's
okay.
Elderly. He's becoming elderly in his position. I think he's over the hill officially.
Okay, fair enough.
But Kenny, I can't imagine Kenny Golladay leaving. But I want to see what you think.
It depends. Honestly, it depends on which direction Detroit goes. I mean, there are rumors that, you know, maybe Stafford finds somewhere to go. Maybe they move him somewhere.
That would have to be a trade, probably, right?
Yeah. But I mean, if let's say they hit the reset button, who knows? Maybe they don't pay Kenny, and they try to just kind of retool. It would suck, kind of just losing Kenny.
Matthew Stafford also has an out on his contract after this season, just in case you're wondering. So it's possible they could part ways.
They ain't gonna release him. No shot.
They could though. That's a card they have.
No shot. It's a card, but it's like the two of spades when the board is all face cards and
the two of spades. Wait, I think it's the ace of spades.
It's not a. Yeah, you got seven Dewey in your hold cards, and you're not. Yeah,
I mean, if no, they're suited, I'm all in. But whatever.
Yeah, but yeah. So I mean, with Kenny, it'd be best if he resigns with Detroit. I look at his situation. I say, okay, he is the unquestioned wide receiver one in the offense, and they really don't have, like you said, you got Marvin Jones, who's always been, you know, that wide receiver two type. So it's a perfect fit for him. You got an offense that throws the ball enough to where he's going to garner 120 targets a season. And what better place to be than, you know, tethered to Matt Stafford, who, you know, likes to push the ball down the field, has great arm talent, so on and so forth. So I think the Detroit wide receiver one, you know, obviously we had Calvin Johnson there before, but it's always been a very lucrative position. So I would say anywhere that Kenny Golladay goes is going to be a downgrade.
Fair enough.
If he goes somewhere else. Do you disagree?
I don't disagree. And I do think that you're right. His fate is probably tied to Matthew Stafford. But I don't know. Like, I feel I'm indifferent with Kenny Golladay. As you know, I was never really fully on the bandwagon with him right from the get-go. And he took off, and I didn't expect it, you know, as much. But now he's kind of like floundering a little bit more with injuries, and it kind of looks like the volume's there in the passing offense. You're probably right, but I'm just being a pessimist.
Yeah, I mean, he's on par from previous seasons. He's averaging 67.6 yards per game. In 2018, he averaged 70.9. In 2019, he averaged 74.4. So he's in the 1,000-yard range on a per-game basis. Yards per target, highest that he's had all in his career. His catch percentage is the highest he's had in his career. So it was an injury-riddled season, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true. He'll probably still produce. I am curious to see contractually what it comes down to. Maybe, I don't know how much money he'll demand, and that could probably be what makes or breaks it. So we'll see. Yeah, so that's Kenny Golladay in a nutshell. The next one we got on the list is Juju Smith-Schuster, which I believe finds himself in a little bit different position in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's got a lot of people to pay. And they've got some wide receivers on their team that I feel like can fill in pretty easily with Juju being gone in Deontay.
Are all the receivers?
What's that?
Are all the receivers that you're going to be asking me about, do they all wear number 19 by any chance?
Kenny Golladay, yep. Juju, yep. Corey Davis, 84. Chris Godwin.
Okay. 14. No, that sucks.
Okay. Allen Robinson, 12, right?
Yeah, I thought you were going all 19s. So that would kind of cool.
We could almost do a, we should do a podcast with all 11s, because I feel like every rookie wide receiver chose the number 11 this year, if you think about it.
Like who?
I
did.
Mims, Pittman? Mooney.
Pittman? There's 11? So yeah, there's only three.
Higgins. No, there's a Pittman, bunch more.
Mims, and Mooney.
Ruggs. Ooh, that might be the other one I'm thinking of.
I think he's 11. Yeah.
Okay. And then, like, what's Ayuk?
Oh, he's 11 as well.
He is. There you go. See? I'm looking at Google just to see if there are any more that we missed. I'm sure there are, but that's pretty impressive. Those are some pretty pretty heavy hitters. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, for Juju, you were saying.
Yeah, sorry, Juju's situation is slightly different. I feel like the wide receivers on the roster can fill in much easier than the wide receivers that were on the Lions roster, conversely. So Juju could be... I'd say there's a higher likelihood that he's gone. So maybe talk to me about what situations you could see him landing in and maybe what this could mean for the wide receivers that are left over on the Pittsburgh Steelers roster.
Yeah, so this one's a little different because we talked about, I brought this up a little bit earlier when we were kind of pre-podcast, and I was like, can you believe that Juju's 9 receptions away from 100?
It's wild.
And that caught you off guard. 766 yards, 91 catches is not ideal. He's basically turned into Jarvis Landry Jr. But I look at this and say this is a situation where Juju would, the volume will likely go down wherever he goes next, just because Pittsburgh has been throwing the ball at an incredible rate, but they're throwing the ball out at the last time I checked was a few weeks ago. Ben Roethlisberger was getting the ball out faster than any other receiver or any other quarterback in the league. So obviously what that's going to mean is you're going to have a low ADOT. You know, your average depth of target's going to be really low if you're getting the ball out that fast.
He's always been really good at getting his balls out fast. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Nice. I won't disagree with you. So I look at this situation and say, okay, the volume's going to come down, but he's also not going to be fighting for targets with 3 other receivers, hopefully, or 2 other receivers. And his depth of target should be higher. So I would say that it's hard suggesting that somebody that's going to be at like 130 targets leaving is a good thing. But I'll say it. I'll say it's likely going to be favorable for his dynasty value, because I think he needs to go somewhere else for people to feel comfortable. So where could he go?
Yeah, where he can get higher quality targets. Yeah, and maybe because you said, like we both understand that Claypool and Deontay Johnson both appear to be ascending. So I don't think that helps him, Juju, a ton. You know, he's kind of getting a little bit lost in the crowd, so to speak. So
absolutely. Surprisingly, there's a lot of destinations that receivers can go to.
Detroit. The funny thing about all of these is that we could probably just be looking at a complete swap, right?
Yeah, but let's look at the teams that don't have anything to swap and just they have voids.
Yeah.
We know that the Patriots have a void.
Mm-hmm.
You can say the Jets might have a void. Like they don't have, we don't know what Mims is going to be. We know Crowder is a good slot receiver. But they don't have and Juju's more of a slot receiver as well. But for other receivers, because like Kenny Golladay, could the Jets be a good fit potentially? If they bring in like a Justin Fields, or if they finally get rid of Adam Gase and they bring in a competent offensive coach, and then you have Sam Darnold, who hopefully progresses. You look at the Texans.
Here, can I just, this might help you out. I looked up wide receiver needy teams and I got the draftnetwork.com pulled up and I'll just.
Let's hear it. Sometimes I disagree with these, but let's hear it.
I agree. I'll list off all the ones that have wide receiver listed as their first need, because I'm assuming these are in order of priority. So there is the Chiefs. I guess I could see that if Sammy Watkins is also a free agent, and depends on how comfortable you are with like Robinson and Hardman.
Okay.
I can see it. It's I can see it. The Dolphins. I could see that.
Okay.
Let's see. The Lions have wide receiver listed second, so I'm assuming that's contingent upon what happens with Kenny Golladay. Packers, I think that's safe to say yes. Patriots wide receivers listed third. Ravens also wide receiver listed third.
See, that's the thing I don't understand. I don't get why Patriots is third, I mean, unless the other needs are that much higher.
I think it's because, yeah, their other positions are heavier needs. They've got an interior defensive lineman and a tight end. Like, tight end? Heck yeah.
How bad could it be?
Like, who's their tight end? That's an offense that's used tight end heavily for the last, like, 2 decades, and they don't have one.
They have a bunch. They have a bunch of, like, meaningless ones.
So I think maybe, like, they just have a heavier need there, but wide receivers definitely need. Ravens, I guess I can see that, depending on how confident you feel in Hollywood Brown being the number one guy. And then the last one, the Titans are listed third. I guess that's contingent upon what happens with Corey Davis, who is next in our conversation. So, and that's it.
What about the Redskins? No?
What are the Redskins? I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, Washington football team.
It looks like they are not listed on team needs. They don't need anything. They're good.
Yeah. See, that's the thing I don't understand.
Oh, it's so they've got quarterback and offensive tackle listed.
What about the third one?
That's it. That's all they've got listed for needs.
So they don't need a wide receiver, even though McLaurin is the one with both Sims brothers who aren't actually brothers, and Calvin Harmon coming off a knee injury, and Isaiah Wright. So yeah,
Antonio Gandy Golden. I don't know how the needs are calculated on this website, but it's good to look at as a guide.
Not very well, apparently.
Yep.
Yeah, not very well.
It's the first result in Google. So,
well, let's make it the last result.
Yahoo Sports says Jets and Raiders.
Yeah, I can see that. I was going to say the Raiders. And I was going to say the Jaguars as well. The reason why I say the Jags. We talked a little bit about this too. I feel like Trevor Lawrence could change the dynamic quite a bit with what the Jags do in the draft.
Mm. Chenault is so juicy.
Regardless,
DJ Chark?
But yeah, I'm a Chark guy.
My God.
But I think there's a bunch of, regardless, I think there's a bunch of wide receiver needy teams. So I look at these, you know, Kenny Golladay hopefully stays in Detroit for his sake.
And we think that he will.
Yeah, with Juju, there's a bunch of spots where I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that. And I believe the Steelers have a cap issue as well. So can they even afford to re-sign Juju?
Yeah, probably not. I'm sure they need to bring back a lot of defense.
So their estimated cap space is minus $9 million.
That's good. They'll be fine.
Yeah. So obviously they'll clear out some stuff there, but I don't see how Juju can come back unless they really rework the books.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Big Ben's contract needs to be restructured too.
Yeah, he's got a fat deal. But
it's the last year of his contract, and it is a $50 million cap hit. they're not going to pay him on that. Can you imagine $50 million for a year?
Yeah, it's 41, but yeah, I get it.
Oh.
Yeah, 23% of the cap.
Yep. Yeah, there's no way they're going to keep that. That's a toxic contract.
Right. So Juju leaving, I think a good place for Juju would actually be the Raiders. They could use a slot receiver. And I like Derek Carr, personally. So I would say Juju to the Raiders would be a great fit for me.
Yeah, I think Texans and Raiders, I think Texans would be my favorite choice. Raiders, I agree with.
Yeah, I feel like the Texans need a big outside receiver, like an A-Rob, and he can play both, like a Kenny Golladay type. Juju is not that for me. Juju is a slot receiver, and I feel like they have a few of those already that can play the position.
Like who?
Well, they play a bunch of their guys in the slot.
I know Will Fuller plays in the slot sometimes, but I'm assuming Will Fuller's probably gone. Cook stretches the field, and there's just really not much else.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, depending if they want to retain Kiki or not, he's purely a slot receiver.
Yeah, but he's not really even worth mentioning almost. You know, I think he's relevant now because of injury. And I like him. Like, I liked him as a stopgap guy during the season because Will Fuller was out, but he's not. I mean, do you think he's a significant piece next year?
I don't know, dude. He flashed as a rookie. I think everybody got excited, and he's dealt with some injuries.
Yeah.
So, does he have potential? Yeah. Is it enough to where the Texans decide, hey, we're going to, I think they're going to look at this season and say, hey, we need to replace what DeAndre Hopkins brought to our offense. And I don't think they're going to look at Juju and be like, that's the guy. Okay. I think they're going to look at these outside. Kenny Golladay types, the A-Rob types, and say, those are the guys.
Okay. I could see it. I think they just need a big body, whether it's somebody on the outside or somebody on the inside. They just have all little burners that can't be good possession guys, you know, so.
Fair enough.
And I think Hopkins was your guy that you could literally just kind of like, you know, throw it wherever he was, whatever route he was running, you could just kind of throw it up and he would fight for it. He was so good at just earning that catch, you know, and I think Juju has that ability regardless of which position he's playing. But I could see you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe from a team need standpoint, the Raiders might be a better match for that reason, but we'll see.
Yeah, for sure.
Next one on the list. This one's going to be very interesting because he was a late bloomer. And I feel like he's kind of followed in the footsteps of Devontae Parker. It's Corey Davis. He's becoming an unrestricted free agent in 2021. I don't know with how well that AJ Brown has progressed as a wide receiver in that offense that they will bring him back. But a lot of teams like to have that big 1-2 punch. So I could see this being more of a 50-50 and not quite as clear as the Kenny Golladay and the Juju scenario. So what are your thoughts?
I feel like the offense has been so good this year that they should try to bring Corey Davis back.
They should, but will they?
They let Corey Davis go. They're going to have to bring somebody else in. So why wouldn't you just keep what you have?
Money. I would rather bring in a rookie contract than Corey Davis is going to want some good money.
Yeah, but you don't know if that rookie's going to be good.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just what you do for money. Like it's a risk. But, you know, would you rather, like, they could probably fill more needs if they did that, you know, a lot more needs. And, like, how much money is Corey Davis going to want?
I'd say he'll probably fetch a $11 million contract.
That's really specific.
I'm going to say $11 million is going to be his number. I'm going to say he's going to get a four-year, $44 million deal. Final answer. That actually seems pretty low.
Because he should finish the season with like 70 for 1,100 and 6 or 7, which is a solid season.
Yeah.
Statistically. Yeah. So, and he's only been heating up as the season goes on here. So I could see him commanding some decent money.
What do you think he fetches?
Gosh, that's such a specific question. I'm going to say 3 years. And I'd say that he'll want top 15 to 20 money. What the dollar amount is specifically, I'll have to take a look to see what the wide receiver contracts were. But
so to give you an example, here are some of the players at 15 million starting at. So the guys like Adam Thielen, Brandon Cooks are at 16. Cooper Kupp is at, you know, 15.7.
Yeah,
Landry's
I got
at
him
15.
Right there.
Diggs is at 14. Allen Robinson's at 14.
That's the kind of money I think he'll command. Yep. Like right in that pocket.
Okay. Yeah.
Lockett, Thielen, Diggs. Yeah. T.Y. They're
probably fair enough.
Jarvis.
So So 4 years, 60. I'll go 4 years, 60. You've convinced me.
Lock it in. I'm gonna even write that in my notes here so we can maybe
Lockett,
revisit.
You asked. Lockett is at 10.2 million.
No, I'm saying Booker it. Booker it.
Booker. Oh, Devontae Booker. Hold on. Let me see. Veteran minimum.
Yeah, what is that, 775K or something like that?
But yeah, so I don't know. I think it's definitely paying Corey Davis $14 million a year is not something that'll break the bank for a team that has very little money invested in the wide receiver or tight end position.
Yeah, but when you can probably fill that for half the money with a rookie and maybe get similar product, because they struck gold with AJ Brown, you know, so maybe they feel like confident enough in their front office they can do it again.
Potentially. But yeah, are you buying or selling Corey Davis?
I don't think I can buy him anymore, so I'm neither. I'm not selling him because I still think that he is kind of like ascending. But you can't buy him now because his price has become inflated over the last couple weeks. So I don't think that there's going to be a team out there that will sell him for anything less than a first. I don't think anybody's going to sell him for a second. And I really don't want to pay like a 108 or 109 for him, which is probably what people are going to want. I'm not going to pay that. What about you?
I actually agree with you. I think he's a firm hold right now. See where he goes. Worst case scenario, he ends up with the back with the. I mean, I guess it's there's other worst case scenarios, but let's say he doesn't sign somewhere else and he's the wide receiver 2 or 1B to AJ Brown's 1A in Tennessee. His value doesn't change much. But if he goes to somewhere positive, then like the Texans, for me, like the Raiders, like the Packers, where people get reinvigorated with the potential.
Yeah, he does have a really interesting range of outcomes on his free agency, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he can go somewhere to die, like New England. He can go somewhere to...
Or Philly or something like that.
Philly, I mean, I think Philly needs somebody to take the bull by the horn, right? I don't think it's a...
They do, but there's just no volume for him there, you know?
Yeah, I know you have an issue with the receivers there. Receivers don't get a lot of volume. Tight ends do in that offense.
Yeah.
Sure. But here's the thing with Philly. If he signs with Philly, that's a good thing for dynasty owners to sell because his value will go up.
I would agree with
even
that.
Even if it's not true, it's like this perception that it's a good landing spot.
I agree, because he's competing with Rager instead of AJ Brown, which people would conceive as a better situation. Yeah.
So I think with Corey Davis, he's a firm hold and see what happens in free agency.
Yeah, I agree. I like that. If for some reason somebody is really high on Corey Davis, like some of our friends are, and they want to offer you like that mid-ish first, then I would probably take that. I would lock it. I would lock it in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's definitely a hold for more sane offers. But our next wide receiver, we got two more to cover, and then we're going to finish things off on the podcast this week and this season with Dynasty Polls. We're going to kind of close off that series. The next one is Chris Godwin, and I think he is another one that is really compelling to me because the team just appears to have the wide receiver position covered. They've got that big one, too. It's very similar to Tennessee, actually, in my opinion. So I could see it being kind of more of a 50-50 ball. But Chris Godwin, the difference with him and Corey Davis is I think Godwin's going to command a lot more money. I could see him being more in the top 10 money. And I don't know what kind of contract they have with like Tom Brady, but what do you think the odds are that the Buccaneers bring back Chris Godwin?
See, they're going to have the cap space to do it. I think they bring him back. I think he's gonna fetch that maybe 18 million a year.
16 to 18. Yeah,
I could see depending on which way the cap goes and so on and so forth. The cap with the whole COVID stuff, cap could come down, right?
I think a lot of people are a lot of professionals are anticipating the cap to be reduced.
So, I mean, if that's the case, I think, 16 to 18 is about right. And that's something that they can afford. And I think there's something they should do. I think Chris Godwin's a very good wide receiver.
Yeah, especially if you're bringing Tom Brady back. I think similar to the Kenny Galladay situation, I think his destiny is tied to Tom Brady's. I can't imagine Brady leaving, but what?
I disagree. Kenny Galladay is, you look at Tampa Bay, they're probably not going to go with a full rebuild where Detroit will. Like if Detroit doesn't retain Matt Stafford for 2021 and they move him, they're indicating full rebuild. Whereas Tampa Bay, and then you have like a 28-year-old wide receiver with, you know, a team that's probably looking at a 3 or 4 year window. Doesn't really make sense.
Who does?
But I'm talking about Detroit.
Yeah.
So Kenny Galladay is a 28-year-old wide receiver at that point. You look at Tampa Bay, even if Tom Brady doesn't come back, they have the core there. Defensively, they've been solid all year. To bring back Godwin and maybe trade for or sign a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean that's a big if, you know. Like I kind of feel like this season with Tom Brady is reminiscent of what the Minnesota Vikings did with Brett Favre in 2012 or whatever it was. What year was that?
Oh, it was before that.
2009, 2010, whatever it was. Brett Favre came back for just an explosive performance, made a big deep drive into the playoffs. I don't know if Tom Brady comes back, it's, you know, all bets are off and like what I'm saying doesn't matter, it's moot. But I don't think that they could so easily contend without Tom Brady. You know, I think he's the centerpiece of the offense. I don't think they can just replace him so easily and just be a contender again. You know, I disagree with you on that. So I think if Tom Brady leaves, they'd be less likely to spend $18 million on a Chris Godwin to, you know, hopefully compete with a different quarterback. So I guess we just differ.
Yeah, but regardless, I just don't see how letting a 24-year-old wide receiver that has top 10 potential go is a solution.
Yeah. Money. I don't know. Yeah, it's just money. And if I guess it, you said they got a ton of cap space, so maybe the right answer is to re-sign. Even if Tom Brady leaves, maybe the answer is to re-sign and try to like work out a trade in future years or something, but so you don't get left with nothing. But yeah, yeah. And like I said, this could be moot because I feel like Tom's coming back.
Yeah, I think Godwin's a great... I would love to see Godwin paired with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, there you go. Just like you were talking about.
I'd really enjoy that. Really enjoy that. And just like, I love when wide receivers have that guy that they're going to be growing old with.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, find Cooks that, isn't the guy.
That Aikman to Irvin, Manning to Harrison, you know, Brady to Edelman and Gronk, like that type of that. Because Brady to Gronk, I know Brady wasn't, you know, he had his players that were kind of revolving in and out, but there's a lot of those guys that you can point to and say, yeah, these two guys together, like Stafford and Calvin, I would love to see a Watson with Godwin for the next 7-8 years.
I don't think you've seen this movie, but I could see Deshaun Watson calling up Chris Godwin on the phone and singing the Adam Sandler song from, I think it was The Wedding Singer.
I have not seen the movie. I will say just the landscape for wide receivers is really good, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think there are going to be guys that get screwed based on, you know, who signs them. I hope there's a lot of movement. I'd love to see that.
There's got
to
be.
Godwin for me is low-key one of my... I'm not trying to make it public, but I'm going to be trying to acquire Chris Godwin shares this offseason.
I'm not trying to make it public, he says on a podcast that gets published to everybody.
Yeah, but I'm not like going to tweet it out, you know, and the whole thing. And I'm very high on the prospects of trying to acquire Chris Godwin.
That's hilarious. And that's good. I think you're right, too. Like this offseason is going to be very interesting to watch the wide receiver landscape because there's just so many high caliber like free agents, and there's a couple of really good wide receivers coming out of college probably. So it's going to be a really interesting offseason. And another really big name, and it's the final one on our list, is Allen Robinson. And he's a little bit older, but he's in a situation in Chicago where it seems like the writing out of all the wide receivers that we've discussed on the podcast today, I feel like he's probably the most likely to leave. A lot of people are already making plans for Darnell Mooney or, you know, Anthony Miller or whoever the, you know, unnamed wide receiver is that's not currently on the roster to take over for Allen Robinson's vacancy. But I'd be really interested to see where he could end up. And he's another one, just like you said, maybe fits the mold to be a good fit for the Houston Texans. But maybe talk about Allen Robinson for a little bit, see what you think about him.
Yeah, A-Rob is, I think he's paid his due. I think it's time for him to go and actually play with a respectable quarterback for once.
Never has.
We can give him that at this point. I think he's earned it.
He's kind of like Hopkins, right? When Hopkins finally got Watson, we're like, oh, finally. And then he leaves, but he's got Kyler.
Yeah,
Hopkins never had a good quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for A-Rob, I'll say... I would like to see A-Rob basically tell Chicago to kick rocks and head across the lake. There's got to be a lake in between, a big lake in between Chicago and Green Bay. I just don't know where that is. And go to Green Bay.
Wow, that would be crazy.
And just have two studs on the outside and then have that old Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson deal back when.
Greg Jennings and Jordy Nelson. Ugh.
Greg Jennings was a stud, man.
I know, but like, I don't know if he was a stud because of Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre or if he was a stud because he was good. I think Jordy was good because he went to Oakland and he had some flashes of still being okay in his later years, but I don't know about I don't know about Greg Jennings, man. I just don't know. I always wonder that. It's chicken or the egg, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't hurt, but you, it's not like every receiver that Aaron Rodgers has touched has blossomed into a, you know, 1,300-yard receiver, you know?
Yeah, virtual. I'm like, Green Bay has always been notorious throughout the history of mankind with their high-caliber quarterbacks. Whenever the receivers that they had that performed well left their team, they you know, basically flopped, you know?
Yeah.
Because Greg Jennings was perfect. Didn't he go to, like, Minnesota? And he was just like, okay, he's not very good unless he's got, you know, Brett Favre throwing to him.
He also dealt with injuries, and at that point he was 29 years old, and yeah, he had come off a couple injuries, and
I still didn't get my questions answered whenever a receiver would leave Green Bay, you know?
Okay, what about, if that's not the case, in 2016, had Devontae Adams broken out with Jordy? Was that his breakout year, or was it 2017 where he broke out?
17. I'd have to look. I'm pretty sure it's 17.
Okay. So he had 997 and 12. So I'm going to consider that his breakout.
Okay.
In 2016. So let's say the Devontae Adams and Jordy Nelson part due with A-Rob.
Oh, yep.
So let's go with that one, since you don't like the Greg Jennings. Let's go with that year.
That would be pretty epic. No. I think regardless of whether or not I think Allen Robinson, I know, was good, because he's done this with bad quarterback play and you know, questionable quarterbacks, I would say, and he's scored well on almost every metric you could look at. Like, I think he was the big Matt Harmon reception perception guy that I feel like Matt Harmon was put on the map from, you know. That was like his main guy, and he broke out just kind of like out of the blue that year, because I think it was after his rookie season. He didn't do anything, and then his sophomore season he blew up after Matt Harmon's report. But I think he's going to be good in Green Bay regardless. I'm just saying, like, is Devontae Adams good, or is it because of Aaron Rodgers, you know? But either way, it's going to be good. Devontae Adams is good.
Yeah. So, see, I think I'm not a big fan of buying, you know, those 28-year-old wide receivers, which is what Allen Robinson is. And you're definitely not going to be able to buy him after free agency. The thing that's worrisome about these receivers is one of these guys has to go to New England, right? I mean, they're desperate for wide receivers.
It's like the old maid card, or like the Joker.
And it's like, yeah, it's like, God, do you want any of those? And depending, I mean, they could see a whole overhaul where there's a new quarterback, they bring in a quarterback, and they bring in, you know, a receiver or even two. But right now, as it stands, that's the death sentence right there.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I envision, did you ever watch the Press Your Luck game show when you were a kid? I think it might still be on, but
like is the game show channel. No, is that No Whammy, No Whammy?
Yes. And I think it changed its name to Whammies or something like that, or whatever.
God, that's my favorite show.
I'm envisioning all of these free agent wide receivers playing the Press Your Luck game, and or basically like us as dynasty owners with these receivers. And New England is the whammy, you know, like all of these other locations are like riches and vacations and cars. And New England is the whammy that's going to steal all your money and laugh at you.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask you something?
Yeah, we're kind of we wrapped up the free agency thing here. So if you want to change this topic, it's a perfect time.
Little off topic, still relevant to fantasy football because it is fantasy football. What's up with Russell Wilson?
Yeah, he started out hot and kind of deviated from his hot plan, didn't he?
Yeah, and his last... What is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games. He has 9 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. No 300-yard games. And out of those 9 touchdowns, 4 of them came week 14 against the Jets.
Oof.
So in the other 6 games, he's had 5 touchdowns.
I wonder if, do you think that there's something wrong with his mobility right now? Like, what are his rushing stats? Because he, similar to Kyler Murray, like, I feel like his production is hinged upon his ability to move around, to create space in the pocket, and obviously, like, rush for yards. And if either one of those style of quarterbacks gets banged up and they're less mobile, defenses play differently, you know, and I think it causes them to flounder a bit. Kyler Murray's experiencing the same thing, and many people think it's because he's banged up, he's nursing an injury.
Yeah, no, week 10, he had 10 carries for 42 yards. Week 11, he had 6 for 12. Week 12, he had 7 for 45. week 13, 1 for -1 against the Jets. I mean, he didn't even run at all. I think that was probably a kneel. And then week 14, he had 6 for 52.
What about week 15?
Yeah, 6 for 52. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that was 15.
Six for 52.
Yeah, I guess I can't explain it then.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little concerning, a little odd.
Well, what do you think it is? Do you think he's getting old a little bit early?
No, it's not even that. It's not like his they're a historically a run first offense. So he's always been a guy that's going to throw for 25, 30 times a game.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 9-10 weeks, he was throwing the ball 35, 40. I mean, he hit 50 one game.
Yeah.
Which is not Russell Wilson-esque. And then the last handful of games, he's had a 28, a 31, a 43 against the Jets, or against the Giants, excuse me, 27, 27. And then this week, he's also in the 20s.
I mean, we knew the volume would eventually balance out, right? We thought that was an anomaly, and it looks like we're right. It's less about Russell Wilson for me as it is about DK Metcalf, and it's kind of funny that once this trend began, you and I were kind of scrambling around a little bit to call DK a sell, you know, like try to sell high on him. I even, you know this, in one league I tried to move him basically straight up for Justin Jefferson, and I got shot down.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, me too. I thought that was going to be a home run. Like, and I was in a position where I was willing to overpay because I believe that Justin Jefferson will ascend to be the dynasty wide receiver one in the near future, very near future. So like I was just kind of like projecting. But current value, I thought that was a home run for anybody receiving the offer, but I got shot down. So
yeah, so look at this. So DK Metcalf, since that week 10, here are his stat lines. 4 targets. 2 receptions, 28 yards, no touchdowns. 5 targets, 3 receptions, 46 yards, 1 touchdown. Week 12, 13 targets, 10 receptions, 177 yards, no touchdowns.
Needed that.
Yes. Following week 8, caught 5 of them, 80 yards, no touchdowns. 8 targets again, 6 receptions, 61 yards, 1 touchdown. 6 targets again, 5 receptions, 43 yards, no touchdowns. And this week, he has 4 receptions for 40 yards on 6 targets.
Yeah. So oof. I'm really nervous holding on to him.
I mean, it's hard to argue to sell DK just because he's so dominant. But my whole thing is the volume. I mean, it's been a concern of mine.
Yeah, but I'm not concerned. Like I should probably refine what I said. I'm not concerned about DK Metcalf being like a solid asset. I am concerned about him holding down like the top wide receiver one or wide receiver two spot in all of Dynasty. And I could lose a lot of equity, a lot of capital. Like if he falls down to wide receiver 5, 6, 7, you know, I don't want to hold on to him as a wide receiver 1 or 2.
Yeah.
He's a hot potato for me right now.
I get it. I mean, he's been propped. I don't want to say he's been the first 7 weeks, surprisingly, was the one that where he was being propped up by reception. The most receptions he had in the first 7 weeks was week 5 when he had 6.
He was just getting touchdowns and big stretch play. He was getting touchdowns yards.
And yep, monster plays.
Yeah.
Yeah. So listen to this. The first 4 weeks, yards per reception, 23, 23, 27, 26. And then 15, 11, 13, 15, 14, 15, 17, 16, 10, 8, and now 10 this week.
Yep.
So right now what you're hoping for every week from DK is, sure, he can have the outburst of the 10 for 177, but he's only had 2 games this entire season where he's had over 10 receptions. So the most common outcome for DK is you're looking for a 5 for 90 in a touchdown game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you're going to get your 20 points, and that's what you're hoping for. But I feel like that's not enough. Like I need more receptions. Like,
yeah,
I need my
more volume.
The wide receiver one in the entire in all of Dynasty needs to be 100 reception threat every single season, because volume leads to touchdowns, leads to everything. Now DK can be the guy that gets you 4 for 110. 4 for 120. We've seen it. but that's not going to happen consistently. And there could be an argument where does consistency matter? Yes or no? You know, there's an argument to be made for both. I truly believe that. But I agree with you. As your wide receiver one overall, it's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow. But at the same token, if it's not DK, who is it?
And I think that's why, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had that full discussion about Justin Jefferson and getting the volume, being young, like his situation not changing in the immediate future. So I think it's pretty easy for us to project that. I mean, it is still a gamble, though, you know, because there's a lot of it is a little bit of a wild card, you know.
Yeah. But, like I said, there's an argument to be made for a few guys.
Yeah.
I get why DK is the one.
Yeah, AJ right now, AJ Brown's the same as DK Metcalf. I think he's just in a higher volume offense, and he's got the potential of Corey Davis leaving. So I'm a little bit more confident in AJ Brown's situation, but gosh, they'd be so interchangeable, you know?
Yeah, they're very similar situations.
Yeah,
but yeah,
so it's tough.
I thought that was interesting.
This is kind of funny that this is one of the years, out of many years in the past where we don't really have that clear cut dynasty wide receiver one. You know, it's always been, oh, DeAndre Hopkins, easy wide receiver one. For a while, it was Odell Beckham Jr. This time, it's kind of like interchangeable, you know, it's cycling in and out, different guy every week. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like the DeAndre Hopkins, Davante Adams, they're just too old to be considered a dynasty wide receiver one at this point. They're putting up the performances and they're definitely like a fantasy wide receiver one, but.
Well, it's different. I disagree with that a little bit. I think you can make the case for them being the dynasty wide receiver one because there's a lot of people that are playing with the 3 to 5 year window in mind.
Yes, I agree.
And if that's the case, then if you play with a 3 year window in mind and you don't really care about resale value and you don't really care about, you know, keeping the equity, you know, above water all the time and trading all this, so on and so forth, then I would be going with Adams or Hopkins and just saying, you know what? I know I'm going to get the volume. I know I'm going to get the production. I don't have to worry about a low volume passing offense. I don't have to worry about, you know, touchdowns being touchdown dependent. I'm going to get my 100 receptions a year and lock that in and not have to worry about it and then try to figure out how to replace that value. Because right now, you look at these players, they're worth 3 first round picks. Like if you're trading for DK Metcalf, the value is going to have to be 3 random first round picks. Let's call it 3 mid first round picks. And that's when the conversation, I believe, starts for a lot of people.
Yeah, as it relates to draft picks.
Yeah, as it relates to draft picks. So it's if you're willing to just say, forget it, I'm going to forego the 3 first round draft picks and I'm just going to hold on to this player until they rot and die and I'm going to figure out how to get that value back later, then you have an easy decision between Hopkins and Adams. Or, you know, even Tyreek, you can make the case. And I think the case could be made for Tyreek, but now he's getting to that point where he's going to be a guy that you're going to have to trade in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
So these young guys, I agree with, there really hasn't been a guy that I don't want to say red flags. There's enough pause that you can put on every single one of these young guys to say, well, here's why he's not the wide receiver one.
Yeah, like a menopause.
Yes, like a meta. Yes, very nice.
Because they get so old, right?
That's the menopause. God, that's good.
It's very good because it's meta also.
Yeah.
And by the way, did you know that Tyreek Hill turns 27 in March? That blows my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what the heck is going on? I'm ready to hang him up. So that's pretty good. I like that. That's an interesting discussion. I think the off season is potentially filled with conversations like that. So I think we need to try to keep this train on the tracks as the off season hits. But that was the end of the free agent and the kind of like the bonus curricular there activities, but extracurricular activities. We do have the season finale of the dynasty polls, kind of like our little research project that we took on at the very beginning of the season. You've got a series of polls for the ones that haven't listened to the show before over the course of the last basically season. There's a basically like a series of polls on Twitter that Izzy has been posting from week to week, basically studying the dynasty values of a subset of players. And it's been very interesting to watch them, the ebbs and flows of these players' values shift and around throughout the course of the season based on performances. And this is kind of like the final installment of this. So let's see where these guys have ended the season, the fantasy season.
Yes. What I'll do, since this is the final week, I will just give you the first poll that I put up and when I put it up, and what the results were, and then today.
And the last, I like it.
We'll start with the very first one that we had put up. I believe I put it up 10 weeks ago. No, wow. I put it up September 22nd. So 12
yeah, that was
weeks
right after
ago.
The season began. Yep. It's the JTCEH.
Yep.
OG.
So Taylor actually won this one. The first poll, the highest Taylor ever got was 67, or excuse me, the first poll, 67% to Clyde's 33%. The highest Clyde ever got throughout the course of the polls was week 10. He was 74%.
Wow.
To Taylor's 26%. Fast forward 6 weeks later, after 16 weeks, we only have 100 results, but this is usually going to be around the same region after, because I just tweeted it 45 minutes ago. Taylor at 90%.
I was going to guess close to 90 if you were going to ask me, because yeah. Taylor is now in the conversation of, like, you know, being one of those top running backs, you know?
Yeah, isn't that wild?
In all of Dynasty. What's that?
It's wild considering he was 6 weeks ago. Taylor was, I think if we go back 5 weeks to our podcast, you had Taylor the last of the 15 running backs that we had discussed.
Yeah.
And 5 weeks later, I think you could confidently say he's easily in the top 10, and you can make a case that he's scratching the top five.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it is shortly after Saquon Barkley was injured, I moved my Jonathan Taylor share for a Saquon Barkley share. And it was kind of like at the time, JT was just bursting out because I think Marlon Mack went down with an injury, right? I think that was around the same time. And people were already crowning mm-hmm. JT. And then he went through like weeks and weeks of not getting a lot of volume and poor performances. And I felt like really good about my Saquon Barkley trade. And now it's kind of to the point where it's not really that big of a gap anymore, you know? It's pretty wild how far he's come.
Yeah, and how far Clyde has fallen.
Yeah. Yeah, completely dismissing Clyde. You're right. Like that's not even an interesting poll anymore.
Yeah. So the quarterback poll, which is actually my second favorite one. My favorite one is the Steelers wide receiver one. This is my second favorite one. The first one I did was back October 20th, so 9-10 weeks ago. The first poll was Burrow at 54%, Herbert at 30%. Tua at 16%. And it kind of stayed around that Burrow, Herbert, Tua, you know, it was basically Burrow and Herbert after that week because Herbert had broken out basically neck and neck until Burrow tore his ACL.
Herbert.
And then Herbert took it a 77% lead over Burrow and Tua, 77-18-5.
Yeah, Herbert burrowed into Burrow's lead.
Yeah, nice. Keep going.
Okay. You're gonna roll. Keep going, yeah, sarcastically.
And now, the final week, Herbert 67%. Somehow he's lost value. Burrow 29%, Tua 4%.
Tua's getting close to 2%.
Yes, that's just he's almost 2%. At 2%. Yes.
Tua is funny, man. He's capable of 303 or 101 at any given week.
I'm going to go on a record saying that Tua ain't it. I don't see a future franchise quarterback.
You think he's like a Tebow kind of guy?
I think he's a Chad Pennington 2.0.
Ooh, ouch.
I see Chad Pennington. I see a decent quarterback, but not a franchise quarterback.
Okay.
I just don't. I'm not there with Tua.
His range of outcomes are wild for me. I have no idea what to expect from him. And I don't know what to do with him either. We might have to center some podcasts around him because in Superflex, I'm so confused.
Yeah.
A Project 3, maybe a Project 3 or 4 guy. But I mean, that's a luxury.
I view him as a low end, like a 15 to 20 range dynasty quarterback. I put him in like a rung below Baker.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, Baker's coming around too, but I agree.
Yeah. Well, yeah, basically where he can have that big game, but he's going to put up a lot of 150 yard, no touchdown games. So final poll, which Steelers wide receiver you want in Dynasty? First poll I did was after Claypool's four touchdown game. Claypool 52%, Deontay 25%, Juju 23%. This was back also on October 20th. The following week, Deontay took a commanding lead, 52%. Claypool dropped all the way down to 20%, and Juju was at 28%. And then it kind of like bounced. Juju took a lead on November 10th. He took a lead over Deontay. And then Deontay took the lead back, held on to it for quite a long time, and has not relinquished his lead. Even after getting benched, he still held on to his lead. And as of today, 62% Deontay, 27% Juju, and Claypool with his lowest ever showing at 11%.
Wow.
So Claypool went from 52%, more 611 votes, basically 325 voters out of the 611 had Claypool. And now only 15 out of the 113 votes have Claypool.
That's insane. Fall from grace.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So what were, so like, this is the wrap up episode for these polls. What were your main learnings from these polls? Cause, obviously like we did this, these things to learn. What'd you learn?
Well, one, you can take advantage of big performances and down performances.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can do it. I think the swings that we see are, I don't know if they're accurate from a one time, one game situation, but I think definitely back to back tough games or back to back good games will really kickstart somebody's value or kind of put some dirt on somebody's value.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I would take advantage of it. I understand it. Like I kind of admitted a few weeks ago. I am okay with the community being hot and cold on a player.
Yeah, me too.
I get it. I get that people are reacting to the performances. They want to go after, well, they see somebody going off, like, okay, that's the demand. I want that. So I'm not gonna get on them for that. What I am surprised with is how big of shifts that are made and how many players are making the shift. I would say about 35 to 40% of Dynasty owners are a 1 week reactionary type of Dynasty owner.
Yep. The thing that I've noticed too is that the swings are bigger the less information that you have on a player. So like the more that a player has performed, and I kind of view it as like a you know, just kind of like laying bricks on a foundation. The more bricks that a player has laid, the more performance they have, the less you know, volatility their value is going to have. And with rookies, that's why the rookie polls were most interesting to me. It's like their values took such big pendulum swings from week to week based on their performances, because we just don't have the same history as we do with, like, you know, when I'm trying to think of a great example, when Patrick Mahomes has a down week, his value doesn't change at all because people already know what he's capable of, and he's on his pedestal, you know. And but with these rookies, they don't have that history, you know. So that's my main learning.
And that makes complete sense, and that's always been the case. You look at, I think you put out a tweet, or Bob Kilgore, somebody put out a tweet from the DTC handle, basically putting out Robert Woods' value.
That's Bobby. Bob Gilchrist.
So he put it out. A guy like Robert Woods, who's now 28 years old, we know what he is. We know what his ceiling is. We know what he's done. We know what his floor is. He started the season at 15.5, and he's ended the season at around that with a high of 18 and a low of 15.5. But if you look at his performances and you take his exact performances and you place that on a rookie or a second year player, you're going to get
big
far
swings.
Greater results.
Yeah.
And that's completely normal. We're taking data points. We've had so many Robert Woods data points that we can confidently say what he is and where he's going to be in, you know, the following years. where we don't have those data points on those players. So when you get a Chase Claypool dropping four touchdowns, it's like, like this could be a guy that's going to be a 1,316 type of receiver. I'm going to get on that because I don't know. But then when we start getting more and more performances where we see what his floor is consistently, okay, maybe he's a 2 for 20 is his floor, then you're going to get a more balanced data points from different people. Like now you see the people that are like, okay, I want the guys that have that potential versus people like, I want the guys that are more consistent. So all these data points are coming in, and over the next year or two, we're going to understand where Claypool's true value lies.
Yep. It's fun to watch. It's very interesting. And I think the action item is to maybe, you know, try to capitalize on that. I think my best example again is I moved JT when his value was at a peak for Saquon Barkley. And in the middle of the season, when JT came back down, I almost was able to give Saquon back to that same team to get JT in a first. So I would have netted an entire first out of that same transaction. So like, that's how big a swings are happening with these rookies. So just maybe plan for that in 2021 and play with it a little bit. See if you can maybe capitalize on some of these big swings.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's pretty good. That's the end of our 2020 season. This is pretty pretty sad, actually. We're going to have to, next time we record, we'll have to make some New Year's resolutions or something. Dynasty okay. Resolutions.
I like it.
That's all we got, you guys. Thank you once again for a phenomenal year. I don't think we say it enough, but we love you guys. We appreciate your support and listening to us week in, week out, tuning in, checking us out on Twitter. So thank you so much, you guys. I hope you had a great season, and here's to a wonderful 2021 for you and all your Dynasty teams. Cheers and goodbye. When your tummy aches, build you a fire if the furnace breaks. So it could be so nice growing old with you. I'll miss you, kiss you, give you my coat when you are cold. Need you, feed you, even let you hold the remote control.
What the hell's that fruit doing here? Get out of the way!
Excuse me, sir, I have to serve the beverages.
Oh. How you doing, sir? Chicken or fish?
You better get out of my way, Billy. You're gonna get hurt.
Oh, yeah?
Don't you talk to Billy Idol that way!
Let me do the dishes in our kitchen sink. Put you to bed when you've had too much to drink. Oh, I could be the man who grows old with you. I wanna grow with you.
Most beautiful song.
I got a confession to make. That song was about you. I'm in love with you.
I am so in love with you.
Hey, Robbie, that wasn't a bad song. You know, I'm gonna tell this record company guys about you.
Mind if I give her a kiss first?
Oh, yeah, do it. You gotta do it.